Welcome to the Hidden History Happy Hour podcast with Alex Dean and Brian Cunningham. Here we have a drink, have a laugh, and you just might learn something about our favorite stories from history.
Please visit our website at hiddenhistoryhappyhour.com and subscribe on your favorite podcast app. And if you like the show, please rate us 5 stars and leave a review. Cheers.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Hidden History Happy Hour with Alex and Brian. Today, Alex, we're going to tell a story that is a little rare in your or our oeuvre so far, a relatively contemporary historical figure. And fun fact, until 2009, I had worked for every U.S. president to serve in my adult lifetime, except the one you're going to talk about.
Oh, I didn't know that. Well, so the gap in the Brian resume.
It's George, only because I was in law school, not because I would not have been honored to do so.
I understand. Good caveat. George H.W. Bush, 41st president of the USA, father of the 43rd. To the modern audience, perhaps best known as author of the classiest letter to a successor to become public. Remember, he left that letter on his desk. Mm-hmm. Bill, you're now our president. Barbara and I are rooting for you. It's just such a
class act.
Really class act. But there's a lot more about him to be known. Last president to serve his country in combat. He was a Navy pilot, served with distinction, Second World War. He flew 58 combat missions. He just didn't go and get his button and did it once. He, right. 58 combat missions, receiving 58. 3 air medals and the Distinguished Flying Cross for heroism and extraordinary achievement. And after the war, he was successful in the oil industry, relocating his famed and established East Coast family to Texas. It almost lives and demonstrates the shift of the Republican Party's fortunes. Yes. in one family. And then, of course, comes politics. He was a member of the U.S. House of Representatives of Texas. He was U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, chaired the RNC when that meant something, when it was not quite the bun fight that it might be now. No disrespect to chairman of the RNC today, but, you know, it was still an undertaking of significance, even if it was a bit easier.
Yeah.
And then he was your most senior diplomat to China, effectively ambassador, but this was prior to the restoration of Sino-US diplomatic relations, right. So they weren't called ambassador.
But a dicey job at that point.
Yeah, a dicey job, as was the next one, director of the CIA. And then he served as Reagan's vice president for 2 terms. And of course, he was president when the Berlin Wall fell. And whatever you think of this, he brought together the international coalition against Saddam Hussein in response to the invasion of Kuwait. So to my mind, he's perhaps the most well-credentialed and experienced man in public life in our time. Towards the end of his life of public service, this is the reason I tell the story, he was asked in an interview to reflect on this record, going all the way back, you know, to Second World War, all these combat missions, CIA, Chinese diplomacy. What in your president, two-term vice president, what in your time makes you most proud? And he thought about it and then said with certainty, my children still want to come home.
Yeah.
And I think that is great. And in case that's too saccharine, I'll give you one more just to put icing on my saccharine cake. Former presidents still have security guards.
Yes.
Still have a Secret Service detail. And one of Bush's guards, you can see the photos of this online. One of Bush's guards had a little boy with leukemia. And in sympathy and love, Bush's detail all shaved their heads for their comrades so that the little boy didn't feel strange and all daddy's friends had the same thing. And they turned up for duty the next day and former President Bush had shaved his head.
Mm, wow. That's almost tears you up a little bit.
Yeah, I agree.
You'll notice, Alex, that I'm wearing a jacket and a little more formal shirt today. And the reason
out of respect,
That's exactly right. And not just respect for the man. Well, and of course, respect for you, but his respect for the office. So he was famous for never entering the Oval Office without a coat and a tie. Now, I'm not that dedicated to put a tie on, but you get the idea. And as I said, I'd never served under him, not by choice, just because of accidents of life. I did serve under one of his greatest admirers, Condoleezza Rice, and I'm friends with another of his greatest admirers, Mary Madeline, and there's a whole crowd. And there is a certain ideological component to it, of course. You know, Bush 41 and Clinton had their ideological differences, although later in life they became great friends. But the respect really flows from just the human being that he was. And you tell some great points about that, but also famously, and I knew about this early in my career, and I tried for about 5 minutes to emulate, and I couldn't do it. George H.W. Bush, every year, wrote hundreds or sometimes thousands of thank you notes to people. If you touched his life, he would handwrite an original snail mail thank you note and mail it to you. And I always admired that and aspired to it, but I never achieved it. But I'm not going to say he's the last class act in the Oval Office, but he was the classiest of acts in the Oval Office.
That's very interesting, because it's so clever too. Retail politics from strategic level is really effective. You know, when Clinton came, I think it was second, to provide all his momentum in the New Hampshire primary, a weirdly high number of people said they voted for the candidate because they'd met him.
Yeah.
When, everyone who got that letter, that personalized letter from former President Bush, will have said, look at this, what a guy. Helmut Kohl, I don't think I've said this on the podcast before. Helmut Kohl, whilst he was Chancellor of Germany, in the back of his car, when they had those enormous kind of mobile phones, just dial up, in the car phones, he had these two big Rolodexes in the back, and they had the name of the kind of top 200 most important people in Germany. And whenever he got through, he just flick onto the next one, give him a call. No stated agenda, no reason, no scheduled call, just call him up, right? And you just do the journey, might get through 3, 4, 5. And then next journey, do the next more. You bet those people will say for months afterwards, the Chancellor just rang me. No reason, just rang me. Right? It's such smart politics.
Yeah, and then I think also in Germany, they have state-funded elections, right? So he wasn't even really trying to get money out of them.
Oh, no. He was, and furthermore, of course, he was Chancellor, and he was in a mixed system which has lists, and he was always going to be number one on his party's list. So he was never in jeopardy of not getting elected himself for as long as his government continued to get majorities. No, he was just good politics.
Yeah, I hope people hear this and aspire to run for office and conclude that good manners and good politics can be the same thing, even though we've seen a lot of erosion of that theory.
Hey, I didn't ask you, what are you drinking?
Oh, well, I am drinking, of course, our favorite Blue Run.
Sponsors Blue Run. With apologies to Blue Run, it's hot in the UK at the moment, and I'm having a beer. But I will have a Blue Run later when it cools down.
It's historically hot, am I right?
Yeah, it's been...
Or ahistorically hot.
It's unusually hot. Let's go with that.
So we have, as you may have read in the United States, a very serious... not necessarily existential, but strategic level drought in the West. We have lakes, we have rivers, we have reservoirs that have never been anywhere close to as low in water level as they are now. And I mention this only because a little bit of a callback to our last episode about unsolved mysteries of history, and it could have happened that way. What they're finding, particularly in Lake Mead, is a lot of bodies.
Good grief, is that right?
That are, some of them are in barrels. Generations of, I'm slightly speculating here, but I think it's very informed by my history of watching Martin Scorsese movies, mobsters have dumped the bodies in these lakes. And
you're kidding.
No, and now the water level's descending and the bodies are literally rising.
Whew.
So we might have a few episodes about that coming up.
Yeah, I thought it was going to fester.
But today, Alex, we have a story, another story of George Bush, not the one you just talked about, who I didn't work for, not even the other one that I did work for. This one, George Bush, is now recognized as a founder of the state of Washington, where I'm sitting today. But Alex, it weren't always so. This George Bush was tough, resourceful, kind, generous, an extraordinary explorer and settler. He was, in short, the American frontier ideal, as you have told in Dean history before. However, this George Bush was also Black. And generations of Washington State school children learned of the non-indigenous settlement of the Pacific Northwest frontier without ever learning George Bush's name, making him one of many African Americans tragically left out of the official U.S. history. But it's never too late. And those kids were at a loss because they did not have the story we're about to tell. So George Bush had an American journey which was remarkable from the start. He was born free in the late 1700s when 700,000 blacks were enslaved in the United States and a tiny percentage were free. Topping this, he was the product of a mixed race marriage, which would not even become legal in much of my country for more than a century and a half after this. His parents were an Irish American servant and a black sailor of African descent. This George Bush became a successful farmer in Missouri, a free black man in a slave state, but he left his newly adopted state in 1844 in the face of escalating racial discrimination and harassment. And George Bush led a team of pioneers on the arduous journey across the Great Plains and Rocky Mountains. Now, I should pause here to say, did not befall the same fate as the settlers led by Alfred Packer in episode 4 of Hidden History Happy Hour, which is a fortunate thing for them all. Slight callback there. In fact, African-American George Bush funded much of the group's trip, including for the white settlers, on his own nickel. The Bushes and four white families who joined them would eventually become the first U.S. citizens to settle what would become Washington State, but not just yet. Upon reaching the then Oregon Territory, having made the arduous trip across the Rockies, they discovered that the provisional government there by this time had banned African-American settlers, condemning them to 39 lashes every 6 months until they decided of their own volition to move on. So the Bushes packed up and again moved, and in a show of solidarity for their leader and their friend, all of the other white families settling with them abandoned their lives again and packed up and headed north, even though they had no legal reason they had to do that. And driven, Alex, as so many of history's big decisions have been, by a confluence of unplanned events, in late 1845, the Bush Party made their way up the Cowlitz River and spent 15 days literally carving a road out of the forest, settling in what they called the Bush Prairie, again, honoring their Black American leader. After arriving late in winter, the Bushes relied on the generosity of the Nisqually indigenous people and the Hudson Bay Company's local outposts to enable their survival in those early months in those harsh conditions in the wilderness. For their part, the Bush family learned the Nisqually language, and by all accounts, he was generous to a fault, sharing food and other resources with not only fellow settlers, but also indigenous peoples, with one report stating that he once divided almost his entire crop for the year among the new settlers who had no resources so that they could survive. So, happily ever after, living in the frontier dream? Not yet. Because in 1850, the U.S. Congress passed a law by fiat giving all the land in both the Washington and Oregon territories to any white man who claimed it. Once again, seeing beyond George Bush's race to his character, his fellow mostly white settlers persuaded the Washington legislature to petition Congress to create a specific exemption for him. And Congress approved, and the Bushes stayed. Now, obviously, there's a not so great side to that story, too, because what of all the people that didn't have the political power to get the exemption? But nonetheless, at least
right.
George Bush was rewarded. He died in 1863. He lived to see the Emancipation Proclamation, but not the end of slavery in my country. And although Bush himself was precluded by law from even voting, his eldest son, William Owen Bush, became the first black person to serve in the Washington State Legislature, where he introduced the law that founded Washington State University. Finally, Alex, in 2021, Washington State erected a monument to this George Bush at the state capitol in Olympia, the first such statue to honor a black person in Washington history. And among the attendees at the ceremony, Alex, were George Bush's great, great, great grandson and a group of students working on a story for their school yearbook at the George Bush Middle School. And of course, great. Like most everywhere in North America, indigenous peoples were the real founders of the state of Washington, but that is another story. So stay tuned.
Great story, Brian. Thank you very much. Who knew when I told a George Bush story in my book in 2021, that in 2022, you'd have another George Bush story.
And to be completely transparent, when I researched this, I didn't put in the words George Bush. I put in the words you know, unusual Washington historical stories.
Yeah. I just happens to be George. It's a great story anyway. And you're right about the loss of the kids who grew up learning the history of their state, omitting this fantastic story. I really like it. How common, it must have been exceptionally uncommon. I may be picking a detail that you don't think is the most interesting out of a story that's full of interesting points, please. But for a free black man to be in a state in which blacks were enslaved, I mean, how common was it to have a free black citizen walking down the street next to, or walking down the lane next to a cotton field where people were enslaved in it? Or was that, it's such a bizarre image to me.
Well, I'm guessing it was pretty uncommon, but you know, as Terry Franklin told in the story of his ancestor, Lucy Sutton, it was possible even in the Deep South
to
be freed by law. Now, I suspect Lucy Sutton wouldn't have been treated that well had she walked the street a quote unquote free person, but it must have been, you know, not unheard of. And there are all kinds of Hollywood depictions, the best one being probably Silverado, which is one of my favorite Westerns of all time, where free black people are operating in very heroic settings, but not usually in slave states. That's what makes it unusual.
That's where I, you know, my instinct is assuming if you get your freedom from slavery, you go to a free state rather than stay in a slave state. But I mean, he was free anyway in your story. You're born free, but extraordinary story. Thank you very much for sharing it. I really enjoyed it.
Well, my pleasure. And I'm honored that it will be included in more Lessons from History. And as of us, Alex, we've done a Thursday episode. We've done Tuesday episodes. We're trying to find the sweet spot for when the most of our viewers and listeners can enjoy us. And we're going to keep experimenting. And cheers.
Cheers, my friend. Good to see you. Thank you for listening to the Hidden History Happy Hour podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app. And if you have questions, comments, or suggestions for topics, you can find us on Twitter or on our website, hiddenhistoryhappyhour.com. We look forward to joining you next time.
Much gratitude to our multi-talented production team of Jeremy Corr, Kate Cruz, and Grace Keller, and to our visionary executive producer, Ivan Williams. And thanks also to our art designer, David Wardle.
Without whom this podcast would be, well, history.
Cheers.